The Extraordinary Ordinary is brought to you in partnership with Silicon Valley Bank UK. Hello and welcome to The Extraordinary Ordinary, the podcast from Women of the Year, where we get to know the stories of remarkable women you've probably never heard of, but whose passion and hard work have changed lives, society, and even the world in all kinds of ways. Just a note that this episode was recorded before Her Late Majesty the Queen passed away. I'm Mojo Abidi. I'm a journalist and the presenter of this very special podcast. And today I'm here with May Parsons. May moved to the UK from the Philippines 19 years ago to continue her career as a nurse. And on the 8th of December 2020, she made history when she administered the world's first coronavirus vaccine. May was then chosen to represent the NHS to receive the historic George Cross Award from Queen Elizabeth II in recognition of the exceptional efforts of NHS staff across the country during the pandemic. She has become a fierce advocate for nurses, especially those from abroad, fighting for better treatment and respect. May, welcome to the Extraordinary Ordinary podcast. It's wonderful to have you here.
Thank you for having me. It's such an honour to be here with you today.
So May, you administered the world's first COVID vaccine outside of clinical trials. Tell me all about that. Did you know it was going to be the world's first?
No, everybody was asking me that previously. And actually, it's quite embarrassing because I thought it was just the first in my trust. So I was aware that there was 50 other NHS trusts that was rolling it out on the same day. And clearly, when they said to me, oh, you could do the ones for ours, I was like, I thought it was just for us. And then the day I was like, oh my God, there's so many people. And it was a nice surprise, but obviously as well, very nerve-wracking. And I think it just made the pressure obviously more intense.
Were there lots of cameras around? Did that make you feel a bit nervous at all?
Yes, I've never had anybody more interested in a vaccine or one injection before. And I said to them before, I've done thousands of vaccines and I've done lots of injections. There was never any in that same interest that I've had with one before. And clearly it's something really special.
How did you feel? It was quite a historic moment. And I remember for me, when the vaccine rollout started, it felt like a real time of hope.
Yes, absolutely. Obviously, by then we were at, that was in December, but we were declared pandemic in March 2020. So by then we've already had a terrible time in terms of the amount of people dying, not just the ones that were vulnerable, not just the ones with historical medical issues, but as well as those that are young, that you would think, you know, never in your wildest dreams that you would think that a virus of this kind will actually decimate the population. But also we had a lot of deaths in terms of our healthcare workers, which is so alarming that it's clearly not something that we were prepared to tackle. For me, it's like looking from the outside in terms of, you know, you can see all these people dying and there's nothing we could do to help them. And at last we had the vaccine, and it's something that kind of, I said this a bit before so many times, that the pandemic felt like we were going to war, but we couldn't see who we were fighting. We couldn't have anything to protect ourselves against. We don't have anything to fight back with. Everything that they were throwing into the patient to, you know, just to find out something that would help them survive it, it wasn't enough. There wasn't much known about it. And so we were blindsided. We were just going through, it's almost like going through to a war that you're vulnerable on all sides. And I felt helpless. I felt, I'm sure all of the other healthcare workers around the globe felt the same, that we were exposed. We were, it's like sitting ducks. Obviously when the vaccine kind of came through, I couldn't wait to have mine. I had mine the next day, and it was a moment of hope, as well as kind of, for me, when I said that day is the beginning of the end of the pandemic. You know, if you get something to protect your patients and protect your healthcare workers, helping those patients, these are the things that we could then take forward and build on whilst we're researching in terms of how we deal with the virus and obviously the disease that it comes with. It's certainly something that I and my team has been looking forward to, because like I said, we were sitting ducks, we were very vulnerable, and we were very much in danger. We were just waiting for us to be infected and then just see how it goes for us. And that is something that I wouldn't wish on anyone to be thinking about, going in daily to work, not knowing if you're going to survive the next week. it's certainly not something that I would want to be in a position with for so long. So the vaccine was definitely so welcomed, and it was the beginning of the end of the pandemic. It was certainly something that we were all hoping for.
I mean, you described it like a war, and I can remember the feeling of that. And it was so scary and difficult for everyone, but to be on the front line must have been so much worse.
Yes, it is. And I could not describe it to you rather than if I can get you to imagine walking into, I don't know, like a ground filled with bombs, for example, and just imagine walking there with nothing to protect you. That's how it felt like every day when we were going to work. And it's not even that, it's the fact that actually you think, am I taking some bomb home? So am I going to be exposing my family too? So that is what it felt like every day during the pandemic. And also we were all kind of scared. And then as nurse leaders, you want to kind of protect your patients, you want to protect your staff. But how do you do that? How do you do your job in the best that you can to protect your patients and your staff without anything to, with nothing in your arsenal, in nothing in your toolbox? The only thing that you can rely on is the people that supports you and the people that you work with, thinking that actually you're all in the same boat but in different situations, and you kind of weather through it and just try and get everyone kind of stable, I guess, because we were all scared, and we just had to carry on because I think our responsibility and our commitment and the things that we've signed up for. I mean, certainly when I went into nursing, my promise was to care and to serve, and certainly that was something that came for front and foremost during the pandemic. So even when I didn't have to actually go to ITU, I volunteered because I knew I could help. But again, that is the sense of responsibility for all of the healthcare workers, that it's something that is needed to be done. I know that people were thinking, well, it's your job, you're paid for it. But I don't think they realized that actually, when we went into this profession, we didn't think that we're going to be, dying at work, or be to die at work because of work. That's not something that we kind of signed up for. So obviously, when everybody was hiding, everybody was isolating, we come out every day. Oh, sorry. We come out every day and we kind of do the things that we do because that is part of our responsibility and our promise to care. And yeah, I think that was so difficult in terms of getting people to realize that they are doing more than that's been asked of them. And it can only appease or try and make peace with the fact that actually we were all scared and everybody is doing their best to cope.
I know everyone on the NHS was doing their best and we're so grateful. And it was all about putting the patient first. And when you gave the world's first jab, your patient was 91-year-old Margaret Keenan. What did you do to help reassure and prepare her? Because you said there were lots of cameras around, you were nervous. She must have been nervous too. It was a big time.
I don't know if you know this, but apparently she's done the first vaccine for TB as well in Ireland before. So she's a trailblazer in her own right, and she's so brave. And the faith that she has for science is amazing. For her to be doing the second time of the first is, it's something really admirable. So I made sure that Maggie is aware of all the possibilities. That is part of our duty of candor as health professionals. So I said to her, I had to make sure that she can actually decide, that she understands what she's going into and the risks that are involved. And clearly her family as well was made aware that she's decided to that she wanted to join in and to kind of say, okay, I'll have the first one. So everybody was kind of involved in terms of the decision, because I wanted to make sure that I'm protecting Maggie in terms of her rights as a patient and her rights to refuse for treatment and things like that, that I am advocating for her. And she was so brave and she was so, I don't know, courageous. And for a 90-year-old lady, she didn't look like 90. I said to her, you look better than me. If I was 90 like that, when I get to 90, I'll be quite pleased.
May, you also accepted the prestigious George Cross Award from Her Majesty the Queen. How was that experience?
Surreal. It was absolutely surreal. It wasn't something that I ever thought going into nursing, going to the UK, that I will ever have the privilege of doing, let alone be chosen to do it. So they asked me, is this like a dream come true? And I said, I actually thought it was such a something that you'd never even, it's not even in the realms of possibility, let alone probability, that I even didn't even think of dreaming it. I was just thinking, oh, I'll probably see her at one of the balconies if we have the Jubilee and things like that. And I thought I would. But never in my wildest dreams that have I ever thought I would be standing in front of the Queen saying, thank you for recognizing the efforts of the NHS and everyone within it. It's almost kind of like that it, that's it. That's the pinnacle of my career. That's my the best thing that's happened to me, apart from my kids and my marriage, obviously. But but that is one of the best things in my life. I don't think I'll be able to forget, even when I get dementia, maybe.
You've got to tell me, what's the Queen like in real life?
She is so nice. When I came there, I was personally really, really nervous. I was anxious about, do I hold myself in the proper way? Am I following all the rules? Or, all those kind of things. Those are the things that are coming to my mind. Like, oh my gosh, what if I say something wrong or I do something wrong? And then the gentlemen there were really, really nice. And they said, oh, don't be so nervous. Enjoy the moment. Clearly, it's easier said than done. But when she came in, she was so nice. She's like, good morning. And we were like, good morning. And she was so lovely. And then she was also hilarious because when we said, oh, so what do you do then? This is what she said to me. And I went, oh, I'm a nurse. I said, I look after the COVID wards. And I said, I did the vaccination. I didn't kind of say I did the first one. But Amanda, the chief executive for NHS England, said, oh, May here did the first vaccine. And then she went, oh, you're still alive then? Were so taken aback. We were like, huh? And then she repeated it and she went, are you still alive then? And I went, yes, I am. And that was so funny because when they said, oh, she'll put you at ease straight away. She's so lovely and she's so kind. I look at her and I think, I remember my grandma. I just feel like, she's so sweet and she's really interested in what you've got to say. I think I remember bits of it, but in the moment, like at the height of it, and you think, oh my goodness, I can't remember what I said. And when we sat down for the photos, she said, well, don't look so glum in the photos. And we were like, we're all giggling because she was just saying what we were feeling. So we were like, all going, oh my God, all nervous, but she was so nice. And yeah, I think she's so sweet and she's so funny.
So, meeting the Queen, giving the world's first COVID vaccine, it all sounds like such an incredible experience. But unfortunately, it did make you the target of some quite serious online abuse. Would you mind telling me what happened?
So with the vaccination in December 2020, clearly it was all in the news, it was all on social media platforms, it was all on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, all of those. At the back of that, I've had a lot of interviews with TV stations, with newspapers and things. At the back of that, we had a lot of anti-vaccination people that were obviously quite against it, and they were saying, these are not trialed enough and blah blah blah. But I had people reporting me to the Nursing Midwifery Council and tried to get my nursing registration pin off of me. So clearly, if that had kind of gone through and they got their way, then that would have been, meant that I would lost my profession, that I would have lost my right to my role as a nurse. But they didn't. I've also had a lot of people calling me names like Angel of Death. The first poisoning, mass killer, those kind of things that was quite intense in terms of the amount of hate that you would get because you believe in something that they don't agree with. If I was any less confident of my belief of science, if I was younger and I was less mature than I am now, then that will probably send me into such a dark place. It's yes, I've been a target of that, and there was a lot of criticism. There was a lot of names thrown, investigations posted on YouTube about I'm an actress, and I'm like, I wish I was an actress. I'm not an actress. I'm not paid enough as an actress. Apparently, Maggie was crisis actor. I was being used as a pawn of the government to control people, that kind of thing. So all of those social media rants towards me about how I've killed millions of people. Yeah, I had those and they weren't pleasant. But again, the best thing to probably do is to just ignore it and just have that belief in yourself that actually what you're doing is something of a greater good, and that what they're saying is not actually, there's no basis for it.
It's amazing that you were resilient enough to deal with all the abuse and harassment, because I'm not sure most people would be. I don't think I could deal with something like that.
Yeah, so I think what they just need to do, so this is what my husband told me before. They said, don't engage, because people have already decided that they have an opinion about you, and they think you're, like angel of death kind of thing. You don't have to explain to people what you are, because if you truly believe that what you're doing is for the greater good and what you're doing is with integrity, you don't have to explain to people that doesn't even know you. So ignore it. Block them, report them, and also make sure that you've got a supportive network around you, especially like with my husband. He told me off for like engaging in comments. I said, okay, fine. So I just wanted to set it right. But again, you can't, because it's not something that you can deal with yourself on top of everything else that you're going through. It's just the energy is best or better spent somewhere else.
I think that's great advice from your husband. May, another thing I want to speak to you about is the treatment of nurses, especially nurses from abroad. How is it being a Filipino nurse in the UK? Have you ever faced racism or discrimination?
Yes, I have. So I've had discrimination, I've had racism, and I've also experienced a lot of microaggressions, especially at the beginning of my career here in 2003. I've had a lot of bullying, and also in terms of how you're being treated because you're different, not different as in you're brown like me. Also, because then I was 23, I was also young in the early stages of my career, trying to assimilate in the community, trying to find my feet. But there's also people that made you feel like as if you're not enough or you're not somebody who's equal to them. So if somebody thinks like that, or somebody looks at you and go, well, actually, you're less of a person than me, then it's easier for them to actually treat you like a lesser person. And that's happened to me in the beginning, and that's happened to me up to now. I've had people calling me all sorts of racist names. Am I allowed to say it?
If you want to, you can.
I was called a effing noodle pot, but with the proper F word. So I've, all those things. And I just think, well, actually, that is not a reflection of me. That's a reflection of you and the reflection of other people. So I now think that if we face them, or if we encounter them, those are the things that we need to actually tackle right there and then. This is something that I believe where the standards you allow or let pass is the standards that you accept. And for me, that is not acceptable.
I'm so sorry to hear that's happened to you. It's just so upsetting. What do you think could be done to ensure that international nurses, especially, are given a voice and are supported and treated better?
Well, out of the pandemic, I'm quite happy to say that there was a lot of growth and birth of the international nursing associations. So we have two Filipino nursing associations in the UK. One of them was born out of the pandemic. We've got a lot of other international nursing, like Nigerian nurses, Indian nurses, Sikh nurses, Hong Kong. All of those international associations have come out, and that is from the pandemic, trying to support each other, because obviously we couldn't see each other. We're just only all virtually supporting. I think that there is a lot of international nurses and international healthcare workers in the UK, and one of the things that we are trying to change is to give that voice to those international nurses or healthcare workers. I think the representation is essential, that I can't have somebody that is representing me or t telling people about me or for me when they don't really know what I'm going through. So I think it's really important to consider that on those tables that makes the decisions for the international healthcare workforce, that there is a representative, especially now that I think there's about, is it 43,000 or 41,000 Filipino nurses in NHS? Oh, NMC registered anyway. There's also the next ones are the Indian nurses. So I think for us, for the Filipinos, there's only one chief nursing officer that's been kind of put on place a few months ago. And those are the things that we're kind of trying to change and to have that representation and to be seen that actually we are an integral part of the NHS and that we are here. We've been here for so long. And I think my platform is we're being seen now, and I'm hoping that we are going to be heard in the future, that it has to be culturally sensitive for us too, because we do want it to belong, because that's the most, you know, one of the basic essential of wanting to in thriving in the community is that you feel that you belong. I think that is something that we're probably wanting to change in the future.
It sounds like over the last 19 years, you've gained the strength to call people out. For anyone listening who might be struggling with a similar issue, have you got any advice on how to deal with comments like that and microaggressions that might be upsetting them?
Be brave. Please be brave, because what I would say is the more that we allow these behaviors to carry on, the more that we let it pass and the more that we allow it to happen, it will keep on happening. Challenge it in a way it's dealt with integrity, obviously, and you know, with calm resolution, but you need to definitely challenge it. The change doesn't start from someone else. The change starts with us. We need to be strong in our resolute to say that actually this is not acceptable. But also there are other ways to do it. There are other people there. There are other organizations there that can help you. You are not alone in the battle. This is not something new. This is something that everyone is trying to kind of stomp out. There are other people there and organizations that can support you in your endeavors. And there's nothing that should stop you from saying, enough is enough. I'm not having any more of it. Honestly, there's a lot of support out there, especially for NHS workers. We have got a workforce race advisories in your union. You know, there's all sorts of organizations there that will help tackle racism.
May, I recently saw firsthand just how important the work of nurses is. I had two grandparents each spend about a month in hospital over this summer, and it was the nurses who held their hands and really took care of them. How can we get people to value caregiving roles more?
I think that is going to be a change of culture. That's going to be a culture shift that we need to do, not just for one community to the other, one person to the other, because until you realize that actually the nurses are there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, looking after your patients, looking after your family, looking after you, I think they are essential in actually looking after a community, especially after the pandemic. Not everyone is going to be there, but the person that's always there with you in any healthcare setting is a nurse. So I think in terms of valuing our nurses, I think that starts with how we treat them and how we treat nurses in terms of pay, in terms of, you know, place in the society, in terms of how we regard them. Don't get me wrong, I'm not asking to be treated like the queen, but you know, it's almost kind of like, do we get less pay than, you know, than supermarket pay for the amount of skills that we provide, for the amount of compassion and dedication that we've already shown during the pandemic and before the pandemic? You know, we are very highly skilled. We are professional carers, and we deserve not just recognition in clapping and recognition in gestures. But yeah, I think those are the sticking points at the minute because of the amount of healthcare workers going into food banks, which is really depressing to be even think about. But yeah, I think you could start with pay.
Lastly, May, if there's anyone listening to this podcast who's having doubts about having the coronavirus vaccine, what would you say to them?
What I would say is that if you're not vaccinated, there's no telling how your body is going to react to the virus. And what the vaccine does, it protects you. It gives your body that essential ingredient for it to fight back or to fight the virus, for your body to be able to fight it back. There is no such thing as putting microchips on your system for the government to track you, because that's you're already doing that on your phone. All those conspiracy theories, all those misinformation that's been out there that are being spread, these are the things that you should be really, really careful about. And when you go and look for information, please go and look for informations that are from reliable sources, not from WhatsApp groups, not from Facebook, not from YouTube, not from people that's got their medical degree or scientific degree from YouTube. You know, these are the things that you need to be careful about, because what you're dealing with or what you're gambling with is your life, the family, your family's life, your future. That's what you're gambling with. If you have any doubts at all whatsoever with the ingredients, with anything, please speak to your doctor, speak to your GP, speak to your nurses. These are the people that you can rely that the information they give you are the right ones.
May, it's been so wonderful talking to you. Before you go, I just want to ask you our four quick fire questions that we're going to be asking all of our guests on the podcast. Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay. Can you name a woman who's inspired you?
My mom?
What about her?
Yeah, she's so strong. She's gone through so many challenges in her life that I'm not going to tell you, because otherwise we'll be here till tomorrow. But she's all through it all. She's, stuck to her culture. She's stuck to her values. She's stuck to her family, and actually put her strength in terms of actually the resolution that she had to do things in order to care for us, all those things that she had to go through. So yeah, all of those things have happened for a reason, and the lessons that she's taught me was immense, and I am like this today because of her.
Did she get to see you in the news when you were giving the world's first COVID vaccine? Was she really chuffed?
Yes, she was. Actually, I had to tell her the night before. I said to her on my way home at 8:30, 9 o'clock in the evening after I've left Maggie, I called her because she didn't know. So I said to her, "Mom," she goes, "Yes." Just in case you see me in the newspaper or the TV tomorrow. She's like, "Well, what?" And then I told her, and she's like really, really proud and clearly very chuffed. And obviously, when I saw the Queen as well, she's printed out the photo and bought a replica medal and put it in the frame. So it's now
Love
hanging in
that.
my wall. Yeah. Oh,
That's
she's
so
so
cute.
proud. I know she is.
What's one piece of advice you'd give your younger self?
Stay true to you and your values. It will never put you astray.
What's the one thing you can't live without?
Rice.
I love rice as well.
Rice is life in the Philippines. Ah,
I grew up in Hong Kong, so I ate a lot of rice as well.
oh, lovely. And noodles.
What's one thing about you that would surprise people?
I'm quite shy.
Are you? You don't
So,
seem it.
I know, this is really weird, because somebody said to me, "Oh, you don't look shy, you look outgoing." If I'm outside, I would never even talk to people. I wouldn't even say anything.
Well, May, you've done a great job today. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I've really enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you for having me.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, please rate and review, as it helps people to find us. To find out more about Women of the Year, go to www.womenoftheyear.co.uk. The Extraordinary Ordinary is brought to you in partnership with Silicon Valley Bank UK. They're the financial partner to the businesses, founders, and investors shaping the innovation economy. The bank for the driven, bold, unstoppable visionaries like you, using technology to make our world better. Learn more at svb.com/UK.